This is episode 399 of Tech Talk Radio, Australia's premier tech talk show, which aired on Monday, August the 27th, 2012.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio in your backyard and worldwide on the pod.
This is an exciting day in the history of the NBN.
Copyright.gov is down. FBI.gov is next to go.
The world is in trouble. There is no Wikipedia.
Who here has an iPhone? Who here has a BlackBerry? Who here uses Gmail? Well, you're all screwed.
So we'll be monitoring this very closely. No one will pay for these rights if they can't find a way to make money off them.
Copyright is such a big issue. Legislation since 2006 is already outdated by the new technologies.
On air, on the internet, and on the pod, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to episode 399 of Tech Talk Radio. I'm Andrew McComb. In a verdict that would have warmed the heart of the late Apple CEO Steve Jobs, a US federal jury last Friday handed Apple a resounding legal victory in its bitter patent war with Samsung, ordering the South Korean tech giant to pay more than $1 billion in damages for willfully copying the iPhone and iPad. Will this be the end of it? And what about the appeals and ongoing development for Samsung? Not to mention the flow-on effect to consumers. Also on the show today, Microsoft changed their logo after 25 years, Kohl's ups the technology offering in store to consumers, and the US Department of Justice has seized the domain names of three websites accused of distributing pirated Android apps. Out of necessity this week, Adam Turner looks at mobility and technology. With the ever-increasing need to stay connected away from the home and office, what are the options in today's vast range of gadgets for people on the go? First up, though, here's this week's news roundup from the Tech Talk Radio News Desk.
This is Tech Talk News.
This week on Tech Talk News, Apple's billion-dollar win against Samsung, Telstra to slash more jobs, Channel 9 and Fox Sports buy NRL rights for $1 billion, the federal government's latest report on climate change, and the first man on the moon, Neil Armstrong, dies at age 82. Welcome to Tech Talk News. In what's been described as a historic court battle, Apple has emerged victorious in its patent suit against Samsung, with a Californian jury ruling Samsung had infringed on the majority of patents in question. The jury of nine also found that software features like double tap to zoom and scrolling had been unlawfully copied by Samsung, and recommended that Apple be awarded more than $1 billion in damages, somewhat less than Apple's claim for $2.5 billion. As the ruling currently stands, Apple could request an injunction against Samsung devices currently for sale that infringe its patents. The jury also decided Apple hadn't violated any of the five patents asserted by Samsung in its counterclaim. But in a minor victory for Samsung, the jury ruled that the Samsung Galaxy Tab did not infringe on Apple's design patents for the iPad. This is consistent with a ruling made some weeks ago by a judge in a British court who said that Samsung's tablets did not infringe on Apple's design patents because, amongst many other reasons, they're not as cool. In a statement, Samsung said, "Today's verdict should not be viewed as a win for Apple, but as a loss for the American consumer." An Apple spokeswoman said the mountain of evidence presented during the trial showed that Samsung's copying went far deeper than even we knew. Samsung is expected to appeal last week's ruling in the Californian court. Telstra says it's considering changes to customer service and service delivery call centres, which could mean the end of up to 651 positions on Australia's east coast. Most of the job losses will be in regional areas, including Townsville in Queensland and Lismore in New South Wales, where call centres are located. Telstra said that more than half of the jobs being axed would be sent to offshore call centres, with the remainder being redeployed within the telco. But the telco blamed its customers for the job cuts, saying people now shunned call centres in favour of online services. Telstra says it's experienced a 20% fall in call volumes to its customer service centres in the past 12 months. A final decision on the proposed job cuts will be made in the next 2 to 3 weeks. Channel 9 and Fox Sports have been successful in acquiring the National Rugby League's TV broadcast rights for the next 5 years at just over $1 billion. The deal is comprised of $925 million cash and $100 million in advertising revenue. Here's Chairman of the Australian Rugby League Commission, Mr. John Grant.
Today we answer the $1 billion question with a $1 billion plus answer. This is a day where everyone in the sport can feel a great sense of pride and where fans of the highest rating code in the country can look forward to seeing great matches week in and week out.
Mr. Grant described the deal as a fantastic outcome, which also sees Channel 9, Foxtel and News Limited surrendering their rights to any future agreements. Channel 9's Chief Executive Officer, Mr. David Gingell, said Nine has stepped up and paid as much money as it possibly could and added that he thought the price was fair and reasonable. The Climate Change Commission has released a major report which says efforts to tackle climate change internationally are accelerating. The report also says for the first time, electricity generated by private solar panels is at an observable level in the national electricity market. On ABC Radio, Australia's Climate Commissioner, Professor Tim Flannery, said the prevalence of solar panels on Australian rooftops could be attributed to a number of factors.
One of the most important has been just the declining cost of solar panels. You know, the cost of production for solar panels has now declined 75% in the last 4 years and 45% in the last year alone. So we're seeing truly extraordinary changes in cost there that were really unimaginable 4 or 5 years ago.
The commission was established last year to provide Australians with an independent and reliable source of information. The commission's report can be viewed online at climatecommission.gov.au. And the first man to walk on the moon, Neil Armstrong, has died aged 82 following complications from cardiovascular surgery. He is survived by his wife, 2 sons, a stepson, a stepdaughter, and 10 grandchildren. Neil Armstrong is famous the world over for being the first person to step foot on the moon as part of NASA's Apollo 11 mission in 1969. In a statement on Sunday, Neil Armstrong's family said, "While we mourn the loss of a very good man, we also celebrate his remarkable life and hope that it serves as an example to young people around the world to work hard to make their dreams come true, to be willing to explore and push the limits, and to selflessly serve a cause greater than themselves." I'm Dr. Ron, and that's your tech update for this week.
Previously on Tech Talk Radio.
Telstra is the only carrier that can do location-based early warning SMSs to mobile phones.
Yes. What did you think I was going to say?
Who knows?
The interesting thing, however, is that they cannot unblock the card.
The tiles change to offer you updates at a glance.
Because this is ridiculous.
You sound like a climate change skeptic.
Ouch. As all grumpy people, they slowly disintegrate.
Help, help, I'm being persecuted. I'm going to hide in another country's embassy.
So why is he being threatened with execution by the American government?
He's not being threatened by the American government.
Yes, make a sweeping generalisation.
Yeah, because 3 have now been assimilated into the Borg.
Are you saying that Sol Trujillo was a wicked witch?
I am.
Time is an illusion.
Lunchtime, doubly so.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
On Tech Talk Radio.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another edition of Tech Talk Radio, today's show. Dr. Ron, you've been outside and given the moon a bit of a wink?
I have. That was really sad news during the week, wasn't it?
It was. It all sort of happened. I think we talked about it last week that he was having heart surgery.
We were aware of it a few weeks ago. He had some major heart surgery, but didn't survive. Unfortunately, Neil Armstrong passed away owing to complications after the surgery.
Was very sad in a lot of respects, but I guess it gives everyone a bit of time to reflect on what he did. And I was thinking about it today. He was an explorer. He was like Burke and Wills was here in Australia. He went off with
a lot more support, and it wasn't so much a
he had support, but at the end of the day, when he it's like an explorer, you don't know whether you're going to come back or not. And I think I heard today that the averages for a space, there are 500 astronauts have been into space, and I think the odds weren't that flash for coming back. Like, I can't remember exactly what it was, but at the time I thought, oh, if those were the right odds for flying in an aircraft, I wouldn't be flying. You know what I mean? So Anyway, great man.
Yeah, his background was a test pilot, as almost all of them were in the program at the time.
He got his pilot's license before his motor vehicle license too. That's dedication. That's impressive, there you go. Isn't it?
But in a lot of regards, it could have been any of a couple of dozen guys who were in the program at the time who could have been chosen for that role. Just playing devil's advocate, perhaps.
The first man to walk on the moon.
Absolutely, yeah.
He stood out there, looked up, and did what his family suggested. Bit of a wink. So he
fluffed his line.
He certainly...
He did fluff his line, yeah.
And I don't think it was a green screen,
guy.
Was it?
No.
He was sort of supposed to say, that's one small step for a man.
Yes.
He sort of very subtly changed the meaning of what he said.
Oh, I think he did very well then.
Yeah, I think he did
extremely
well.
He did very well. He would have had a lot on his mind just at that point.
Anyway, first and foremost, I'm still alive. This is good.
Yeah.
I haven't sunk through like 8 feet of dust and suddenly disappeared. I'm okay.
Indeed. Anyway, welcome aboard, everybody, to another week, episode 399 of Tech Talk Radio.
Really?
Yes, truly. This flies past, doesn't it? I'm Andrew McComb. Dr. Ron is in this evening. Alina is in this evening. And Graham is in down the very end of the panel with a yellow microphone this evening.
Yes, I don't know why I got a yellow one this week.
I don't know.
Maybe you'll know it's Graham when you're speaking because it's the yellow microphone you're listening to.
Dr. Ron, what did you do on the weekend?
I went to Game Masters.
Woo! You went where?
Game Masters.
Game Masters.
Yeah.
Oh, that's what you said. Okay.
The exhibition down at the ACMI.
At ACME.
Really? Did
in
you
the city?
Did you play lots of games?
Lots of games.
And this is what Lena was saying for us all to do, to go and check them out.
It was very exciting.
Did you play Galaga? Space Invaders?
I played all of that and more.
And what did you do? Yeah? And
Dance Central?
No, I didn't have a dance. That was popular. Dance Central was very popular.
It's a great space for it.
Yeah.
Got down there.
Awesome space. Mm. They had another one which was like an enclosed studio area down the end where you had 3D goggles and you had to shoot a thing. It was like a PlayStation, I think.
Yep.
PlayStation controller, and you had to shoot something and had your 3D glasses
all
set up.
Child of Eden, I think.
Yep. Well done. Mm. Well done. I knew you'd be the right person to speak to. But my favourite of all time that I walked past and I couldn't believe it when I saw it, SimCity Classic.
Ah, nice.
On Windows 95.
Yep.
Brilliant.
I remember that.
It was brilliant. It was really good. Talk about a blast from the past.
Do you remember all that time you wasted?
I did.
Which has just disappeared out of your memory, and you've like, you know, when you get a smell and it reminds you of something, or you hear
that's
a music track
it
and
like.
It reminds you of something, it's like, oh, I remember those wasted nights. And yeah.
That's what it's like. And it's funny. What actually occurred to me at the time was that it's amazing how much the interface has changed. We just have an intuitive sort of expectation that now if we start scrolling the scroll ball on the mouse that you're going to maybe zoom in and out, or you can click and drag a map to move a map around the screen. But this was back in Windows 95 days. You've got a horizontal scroll bar and a vertical scroll bar. And if you want to move around the map, you've got to click the little arrows or click and drag a scroll bar. A lot of the interface was very different to what I was expecting it to work. That's just how we've naturally evolved over the
years. Did you go think through it when you sat down and had a look at it? How on earth did we play this?
Well, I started playing it. I was playing it for about half an hour or 45 minutes. And I was dropping roads and power lines and industrial zones and commercial zones and residential zones.
Yeah.
And I was getting pop-up like message boxes saying, the traffic's gone crazy. The drive-by shootings are on the rise. Get a bulletproof limo or build more roads. Okay. Click OK. Click the OK button. It was just like a Windows message box that popped up.
Yep.
So it was very rudimentary by today's standards, but I remember when we played it at the time, it was a lot of fun.
There's a new one coming out soon, New SimCity. So it'll have all of
the... Is this the one that's integrated into that social media device?
There is a social media version. I think it's a Facebook game.
Yeah, I thought that was
but
the
that's
one.
That's sort of the free to play little dumbed down version of it.
Oh, okay.
There's a full release coming soon. So
very good.
That'll be good.
So Game Masters is on at ACME in Melbourne until the 28th of October, it says.
Oh, so you got a month to run.
So you've still got time to get down there, even if you're not listening
Interstate?
In Melbourne. If you're really into games, come down to Melbourne and go and have a look.
Yeah, tickets are about $20 each, but you don't have to pay for the arcade machines once you get in there. A lot of people seem to think that they'd have to put coins in them, but no, you get freebies when
just,
you go
just walk up to them, press player one or one player or the button and off it goes.
Off it goes.
Is it purely video games or are there like the old pinnies there like from the yesteryears?
There's
no
pinball machines but they're no, it is all video games.
Okay.
Yeah. But video games of all different shapes and sizes from all over the world. There's also concept art. So there's from the games that you love, you can see the original sketches that led to whatever character or that kind of stuff. And you can see Tim Schafer's job application to LucasArts. Oh. It's on the wall as well, which he drew a point-and-click adventure. He put his resume or his application as a point-and-click adventure.
Cool.
To try and make an impact, and that's up on the wall to have a look at.
They've got a lot of touchscreen devices around with things like, yeah, concept art, where you can just walk up and put headphones on and swish through the screens and look at different designs and things. So, like we used to play Warcraft in the early days and StarCraft, they've got like the original Warcraft and StarCraft console set up. You can look through the, the concept art and all that sort of stuff.
Is it just as good for young kids? As
Definitely. Yep. Kids, yeah, definitely. There's a lot of things that are down low so the kids can play. And
It's a bit like Science Works.
Yeah, it is. It's a hands-on experience for sure.
We've got little handheld consoles like from Game & Watch and all the really early ones.
So what's it cost to get a family in? Am I going on the weekend if it's...
I think it's $20 for an adult ticket. Children's tickets would be a bit less than that. But,
Okay. Well, I'm just tapping away furiously. So what took you there, Dr. Ron?
It's something that I've had in the back of my mind that I wanted to do for a long time. Yeah. So I was really glad that I was able to. If you go to acmi.net.au, acmi.net.au, and there'll be a link there to Game Masters. It'll give you the prices and the open times.
Mm-hmm.
There's also specials on as well. You can go at different times, like on the cheap, if you keep your eyes and ears open.
Retro Fridays, I think half price.
There you go.
Yeah.
Okay.
All tickets $10 all day on Fridays.
Yep.
Cool. Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Are they open late at night?
Yes.
It might be something to do after school, take the kids or something.
I know they definitely have, I think they had, I don't know whether they still do now, but at launch they had late night Thursday nights. So
very good.
Yeah, called Late Bit.
Lots to talk about on today's show. It sort of all happened across the course of the weekend, Samsung and Apple being one, just to name a few. Obviously, there's some new release dates coming out from the land of Apple. Someone's changed their logo, Microsoft.
Yeah.
Not that there's much to talk about there. It's just a logo change,
I know
really.
A local shopping centre that might have to change their logo because it's very, very similar.
Oh, yes. Yeah, it won't be. Yeah. And
I was walking through there last week and I went, that's very, very similar to what Microsoft's just brought out.
Yes.
They're going to get an angry phone call.
And what else are we going to talk about? There's, cinema changes happening here in our local city as well, which is relevant because it's Art Deco.
Not changes.
Not changes, yes.
Yeah, which is the really cool bit, yeah.
Excellent. Anyway, that's all to come on tonight's show. Hotspot Gadget app and website, by the way. Lynn's going to tell us all about the latest gaming stuff that's coming out. And in the meanwhile, it must be about your say. So, yeah.
Your say on Tech Talk Radio.
Feedback at techtalkradio.com.au is how to have your say. Prime Meridian via the contact form says, good artists borrow, great artists steal.
I've heard that before.
Steve Jobs was likely quoting Picasso, who many claim to be the originator of this. Others say it was the poet T.S. Eliot. Always misunderstood. It's not about theft. It's about being inspired or influenced by being what has come before. Regards Prime. Yeah, we spoke about Steve Jobs saying that, I think, last week or the week before.
We did. If he was alive today, how do you think he'd feel after what happened on the weekend? Without going into too much detail just yet, because we're in Coro.
Oh, I think he would say, well, it was an obvious, inevitable outcome. And
he would say, I told you I was going to take him down.
Yeah, I told you so, I told you so.
Good. All right.
Carl, via the contact form, says, hi, Tech Talkers.
Hi, Carl.
Sup.
Well, after being shot down for complaining about mooted changes to the iPhone dock connector.
Oh, dear.
I did find all the whinging about the removal of the start menu from Windows 8 pretty amusing. Dare I say it, hypocritical.
Good point.
You can say it, Carl.
You can, you have. We take it on board.
All you poor Windows users with no start menu, us Mac users haven't had one for years.
Lol.
Instead, using the very user-friendly app dock, we can now use Launchpad as well.
Mm.
The point I was making last week is that sometimes progress for its own sake can actually be a backward step. And that a lot of people still rely on Ethernet for internet and data, where a Wi-Fi network is unnecessary, unreliable, or impractical. Dr. Ron, says Carl, as none of us want to lose you from radio, read the Assange case. There is solid evidence that the United States is building an espionage case against him that carries long jail terms or the death penalty. This is where his lawyer's real concerns lie, and something that I thought deserved better than a so what from you when Graham pointed this risk out.
Citation needed.
Cheers, Carl. Carl, so thanks for your correspondence. We did this to death last week. download the episode if you haven't heard our discussion, the discussion Graham and I had. I think two things that Graham
really?
And I...
That's an interesting word for it.
Two things Graham and I agree on. We probably haven't heard the last of this sordid tale with Assange.
I'd say not.
No. And number two, I think lawyers, QCs, barristers and solicitors are all getting very rich.
Mm. I think there's possibly one other thing that we might be able to agree on, and that is no matter what happens, we will never, ever know the full story.
Well, yeah, I think that's probably a fair comment too.
No, I think he likes the limelight enough to spill the beans in a memoir or something in 20 years' time.
Yeah, but we won't know whether it'll just be his version of things. We'll never know what the real truth is.
Carl, thank you for your message. Primal, thanks, by Carl. The feedback address, says, for anyone who's going to New Zealand, it's against the law in New Zealand, passed through Parliament as anti-competitive behaviour, to lock a phone to a carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So all phones are free to put any SIM card in them.
Yep.
If you're going overseas and looking for a cheap phone, this might be a good place to stop by. Cheers, Primal.
Interesting.
We were talking about...
A listener wrote in asking about getting phones in America and using them here or something like that.
That's right.
Last week.
Yeah.
Or saving a bit of money by buying the handset overseas.
Should I buy them in the United States or not? Yeah.
Yeah.
But Primal's got a good point. Primal is... in the chat room tonight.
He is.
Chat.techtalkradio.com.
He's in Adelaide, if I recall, isn't he? He is. I was on Adelaide Radio today. You probably didn't hear me. He's probably working, like most people were.
Indeed. Indeed. So come and join us in the chat room if you're listening to the program live. Come and join. Oh, some interesting names in the chat room.
There are, aren't there? did you know Senator Conroy's taken it to task upon himself to try and reduce the roaming fees between Australia and New Zealand?
Oh, bless him.
Because when you think about it, where we are on the east coast of Australia is actually closer to New Zealand than where we are, Perth, on the other side of the
Yeah.
And yet there were profit margins there for telcos in excess of 1,000% on roaming charges.
Roaming data in particular?
Yeah, roaming data in particular between here and New Zealand. And
it's absolutely disgraceful.
In the past 12 months since the government's been looking into it, it's fallen from 1,000% margin to 300%. profit margin. So the way it's going to be legislated, I believe. Mr. Conroy is going to come out and actually legislate, and his New Zealand counterpart will obviously be doing something similar. But as you said, Graham, it's outrageous. It's terrible.
They do a fit. I mean, the profiteering on data for international data in particular, but also for out-of-plan data, as I discovered recently to my shock and horror.
Mm.
Did you tip over? Did you? Your allowance?
It's also voice data, voice roaming as well as data.
No, I had an incident with a family member with a new data card in their device, and they basically forgot to put the plan on the SIM card.
Ah, right.
So they got the first bill, and everything was casual rates.
Which would have been a lot more than if there'd been a data plan on the account.
A lot more by... several orders of magnitude.
A couple of dollars a megabyte or something?
I have no idea. The grand total was 1,300 and something.
Ouch!
For 1 month's data use.
I hope you didn't pay it, did you?
No.
No, good.
No.
Did they offer to meet you halfway?
I had
as Telstra does.
I had two very different experiences with the Telstra support line when I rang up. The first person I spoke to was... unhelpful and combative and extremely
standoffish,
yeah, extremely reluctant to help in any way at all. The first response was, where did you get the SIM card? Got it at a Telstra shop. Well, you have to go back to the Telstra shop to resolve the problem.
Stop passing the buck.
I didn't take well to that suggestion.
Should we be talking about this now, or is it before the courts?
No.
That's for sub judice to say.
Doing a John Fain. We're not going to be discussing anything that's in the court process.
I took exception to that and insisted that I talk to a manager, talk to that person's supervisor.
Good move. When you're not happy.
Which he refused to put me through.
Illegal.
Wouldn't put me through to the supervisor.
That's illegal.
Though she'd gone off several times to talk to the supervisor.
They're just going to get the back room going, guess who I've got
on the
phone?
And then said, oh, well, I'll escalate it and someone will call you on Tuesday. This was ringing on the weekend. So
did you get a call on Tuesday?
Didn't get a call on Tuesday, didn't get a call on Wednesday, rang them back on Thursday and got on to somebody who was extremely helpful, extremely sympathetic, knew how to solve the problem, and did solve the problem.
Oh, so it's all done and dusted now, is it?
Well, so I believe. Credited back, applied the plan that should have been applied retrospectively, worked out exactly sort of what needed to be done, and told us the new amount we had to pay for the bill, which was much more reasonable. And
that's good. That's a good outcome then.
It well, just pending getting the next bill and making sure that it all actually did happen.
Yes.
Oh, the other thing the first consultant did, the evil one, where she didn't even leave any notes on the account at all. So it was as if the conversation never happened. So when I rang back the second time and said, look, someone, I spoke to somebody on the weekend, they said, oh, well, there's no notes on the account about it.
Mm.
So
that's a right piece of work.
Yeah. Well, the supervisor, they had to escalate it to the supervisor the second time as well because the call taker I spoke to wasn't authorised to credit back quite that amount. Mm. The second supervisor said they would try and track down who I spoke to the first time. So
that's good.
They all tend to hide by anonymous first names and refuse to give their second names, don't they?
I can understand that to some degree because they get some very angry and not necessarily stable people on the line.
There are privacy concerns.
But
they deserve to be safe at work.
Yeah, but they need to do a good job as well, and they need to be accountable within that. So there need to be something that, a number or something you can get back to them with.
All right. But yeah, you do need to have some follow-up, whether it be a case number. I had an issue with iiNet recently. Yeah. Flawless. Really, really good issues in following up. They even rang me back when they said they would.
And that's great.
And after is it all okay now? Yeah, it's fine. Thank you very much. Thanks for calling.
It seems to be with Telstra, sometimes you get a good one and sometimes you get a really bad one. Yeah.
Dr. Ron?
Andy B in our chat room says he had a good experience with the Telstra live chat thing.
Oh, yeah.
He got a phone. Yes, it is a bit of a thing.
Thing.
He got a phone call back from overseas to make sure what had been promised had actually happened.
That's good.
That's good news.
Which chat thing were you on?
It would have been the chat thing.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
The Telstra one.
Yeah, the chat.
Telstra live chat.
Live chat. Oh, yes.
Haven't tried that.
It works. It's good.
And Primal was listening to me on 891 ABC Adelaide today. Well done, Primal.
Lee, via the feedback address, says, hello.
Hello.
First time contact with you. I enjoy your show. I listen to the podcast here in Brisbane. I am a dinosaur over 50.
Oh,
that's not really a dinosaur. Come on, Lee.
That's not a
dinosaur.
This
scared me when this email came in today.
And also visually impaired and only recently starting out into the cyber age with my wife and myself getting an iPad last Christmas.
Whoa.
Well done.
Which is our first ever home computer.
Well done.
Good place to start.
It's a great place to start. As I cannot read the screen, you probably know Apple has inbuilt voiceover controls in their equipment, which means I can even use the on-screen keyboard on the iPad. At work, though, I've been using a speech program called JAWS on our Microsoft machines over the past dozen or so years now and use the calculator number pad as my mouse, which is quicker than using an actual mouse.
Cursor up, cursor down, across type sort of thing. I'm envisaging.
Yeah. If I can, I'll forward an article from an adaptive technology site written by a blind woman and her story of contacting various tech help centres and their responses to her needs. It's quite interesting. Cheers for now, Lee.
Thanks, Lee.
Send it through and we'll definitely have a look and glad you enjoy the program.
That's something we haven't really touched much on, isn't it? Accessibility in tech.
No, it's a bit of a... Mm. It's sort of taken as lay down as there, but it's very important with alt tags in web designs and a lot of all those interesting tags that you sort of gloss over at times or don't, if you're of good sight and the likes, you tend to gloss over. But it's very important.
Accessibility in games is becoming better too.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of... So for a lot of puzzle games, they're getting... putting colorblind options in there so that then it's not always red and green puzzle pieces that you're dealing with. You can put purple and yellow in there so that the people who are colorblind can see it better and not have to rely on knowing distinguishing color to actually play the game.
My only concern with a lot of these things for visually impaired people, I guess, is the capture stuff. Like I can't do that. And I can see, if you know what I mean. And that technology must kill a lot of people.
I think that's jumped the shark, the capture system. Yeah. I don't know what the answer is. I don't know what the better solution is.
Those words that they mumble together and lay them all across and bend them around.
And they're not even words.
They're sort of words and you go, I think that's an I, but that dot could be a T or the top of
and you
R.
have to try 5 and 6 and 7 and 8 times before you get one that works sometimes. That really bugs me hard that you can't get them.
I just get it to read it out to me.
Well, that's no better.
No, have you heard some of those?
Yeah, it's usually better than reading it though.
There's one which I use. It's got a farmyard behind it, so someone speaks and you can hear chooks in the background and stuff like that to try and hide it so the spam bots can't.
Is this so people can't use speech to text engines automatically? So, yeah.
That's right, it's impossible to understand. It's just as bad as the images are.
Mm.
We should do a themed night one night on accessibility.
That would be a good idea. We should see if we can get an expert in or something.
Yeah, that'd be fun.
Last but certainly not least, Eric, via the feedback address, says, "Hi, team. Thanks for the great show." Welcome, Eric. "I've been listening to your podcast for about 2 years since we moved here to Finland from Australia."
Reminds me of a Monty Python song.
"Listening to your discussions about tech in Australia, it's interesting to compare with life in Finland. As you can guess, Finns have been very early adopters of technology, especially mobile phones."
Yes, Nokia.
"Finland was one of the first countries in the world where you could use text messages to pay for things, like a drink from a vending machine or to add time onto a parking meter. On trains and at airports, you see many travellers presenting their ticket as a QR code displayed on their mobile phone."
As it should be. Well done.
"The conductor or airport staff just checks the ticket with a handheld scanner."
You can do that in aeroplanes here now, can't we, Dr. Ron?
You
get your boarding pass sent through to your phone as a QR code and they scan it as you get on.
Depends on the airline. I think
you can with Qantas. Okay. Not that I've flown with them lately.
"At school, the kids are expected to have a mobile phone, even seven-year-olds in their first grade.
Ooh.
As most kids either walk, cycle, or take public transport to school, the phone gives them some independence and parents some peace of mind. Another surprise here is that broadband data is only charged by the size of the pipe, not the volume of data you use."
Yay!
"Even for 3G. For example, at home we have a contract with a maximum speed of 8 megabits per second down, 4 meg up, enough for video streaming, gaming, etc. This costs about $50 per month. Last month our total data volume was about 100 gigabytes. The price is the same whether we use 1 meg or 1 terabyte. I guess the philosophy here is that the cost of the broadband infrastructure is a function of the peak speed of the network, not the volume of data. It doesn't cost the ISP anything to send a byte of data once the infrastructure is in place. So why charge end users for bytes of data?"
It's cash cow over here, obviously not there.
Of course. All the best, Eric. Thanks, Eric. Thank you for the feedback.
Thanks, Eric. That was really good. I wonder what type of, Eric, if you are listening, what type of broadband you get. Is it HFC? Is it ADSL?
How is it delivered to your house?
Yeah.
I'm going to go out on a limb and say it's fibre.
Yeah, I would too. The modern upstart of a country like that, you would think, wouldn't you?
Absolutely. Yeah, that's all the feedback, Andrew. Okay. Just thank you, everybody, for your correspondence this week. If you want to communicate with the panel, you can. feedback@techtalkradio.com.au.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
Adam Turner's got a great view from the couch this week on the show. It's all about mobility. What do you get these days when you want to go mobile? Because there's news, says he, looking at Lena across there. Confirmed new iPad mini to debut in October after the latest Apple iPhone's September bow. So we've got two announcements coming out. This was an article in All Things Digital, so a reputable journalistic place. So, yeah, the iPad mini.
I do like that website, actually.
It is good, isn't it?
They had a funny one on the weekend.
Did they? What?
Samsung opens new Apple store in Sydney. Lol. Have you seen the photos?
That's very funny.
I have, actually, and it looks incredibly
exactly
the same.
Like an Apple store. I'm like, oh, guys.
Even the guys with the blue T-shirts on.
Yeah. And they have a Genius Bar, but they called them Tudors or something.
Good. Well, now you've railroaded me.
Sorry.
That's all right. Let's talk about...
No, what were you going to talk about with that?
Oh, we'll come back to it, I guess. But I was just going to say, it's nice, I think, the market for a 7-inch device or something that's a hybrid between a phone and the iPad or one of the bigger displays is good because it just means it's going to fit in places which, you know, you want a little bit more than a phone gives you, like for navigation. You want a little bit less than an iPad for a short trip somewhere or traveling. And... I think it's going to be,
you know, when people first started using Bluetooth headsets and they looked like silly people and people made fun of them.
Yeah. It's like when you knock yourself out with one of those big phones these days.
On your 7-inch tablet talking into it.
It's not a phone.
You're going to look like that.
It's not a phone. It's just a tablet.
Yeah, no, but if it, like, there's the Galaxy
one. There is one that is a phone.
You know what looks even sillier?
It looks ridiculous.
It's when Mr. Gates was... over in India, I think he was, and some people wanted a photo of him, so they held their iPad up to take a photo.
I've seen so many people in the wild using their iPad to take photos. Why?
It's why? It looks like someone's about to hit someone over the head with it or something like that, but anyway.
What does the rumour say as far as the size goes, Andrew? You said the...
They've always been talked about a 7-inch. It's a hybrid type sort of size.
Now, the one article, everyone laughed at, which was the big foe, was that the Google Nexus? 7-inch? That was 7-inch.
7-inch, yeah. I think, yep. Yeah. It just looks ridiculous when you're talking on it like a phone.
The Galaxy Note, I think, was...
Oh, the Note. That's right.
Okay.
No, you're right. It was the Note. I laughed and laughed.
And was that a 7-inch display, Graham? Do you know off the top of your head? I'm trying to remember. Samsung Galaxy Note, frantically Googling.
Bear with.
Samsung. You'll get all sorts of other search results currently if you're Googling Samsung.
Mm. Redirect to apple.com. Ooh.
Lol.
Oh, lol.
Too soon.
Is that too soon?
Now, it was funny, in the same week that Apple became the world's most valuable company of all time, that they should also win in the United States over the patent issues where they alleged, and it's now been proven, or a jury has found on their side, that yes, they believe that Samsung did copy Apple's...
Those internal memos were the smoking gun, weren't they?
Well, yes.
You couldn't walk away from that.
Yes, and the interesting thing I find about it is that we're only talking about older devices. We're not talking about the new Samsung Galaxy S3 thingies and all that sort of stuff. That's all to come. Mm. That's all to come. But I guess the dilemma that's now going to sort of give everyone a bit of grief is, what's going to happen in the rest of the world? Will this is obviously in America. Now, I think in the US, Apple's obviously going to go the next bit, which is the injunction to stop Samsung selling all the devices of which their patents were infringed, and then they're obviously going to take the next round up for the next batch of phones and tablets and stuff like that. What do you reckon is going to happen in the rest of the world?
Well, it's quite clear. What's going to have to happen is that everybody else in the sector is going to have to design phones and tablets that are, you know, octagonal or triangular, anything but square with round corners. You're not allowed to be square with round corners.
No, that's not true at all. No. The trade dress is the only thing Samsung didn't get stung for.
All right. I've read it backwards.
Very wrong there.
Sorry.
the form of it is the actual only thing that Samsung didn't get stung with.
This is basically some of the issues that they had. Some of Samsung's handsets, including the Galaxy 4S, the Galaxy S4G model, infringed Apple's design patents for the look of its iPhone, including the system it used to display text and icons. If you look at the shape...
Oh, so we'll have to have them without text or icons?
Yeah, pretty much.
Oh, okay.
Stop it.
All the disputed Samsung devices had copied Apple's bounce back response. You know the rubber band thing where you push it over and it bounces back?
Mm.
Yeah, well, apparently they copied that, which makes, you know, it looks like a rubber band sort of thing. Graham's looking at me with that. What are you talking about? Look, do you know what we mean?
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Yeah, good. Yep. Okay. And several Samsung
devices. That's just his face.
Oh, that's his poker face, is it?
It's like that all
Dr.
the time.
Dr. Ron's laughing.
I have no comment.
Yeah, I thought you might. Several Samsung devices incorporated Apple's facility, allowing users to zoom in to text with the tap of a finger. Because, you know, when you see a web page on a phone and you tap it and you zoom in, apparently that's Apple's patent, that.
Oh, wonderful.
So
how do we suggest that we have a user interface indicate that you're at the end of the scrolling range?
Well, it's interesting. You can do it any which way you like, except
as long as it doesn't bounce. Okay, good.
Yeah. Maybe it can loop through. Doesn't that what Android does?
Oh, that's really annoying.
You can keep going on Android. It goes back from screen 5, 6, 1, 2, 3, and goes through again.
No, well, mine doesn't. Mine stops when you get to the last.
That sounds a bit WinFo. That sounds like something the WinFo thing would do. Keep going, wrap around. Yeah.
Now, the other thing, too, is this going to put a shot across the bow of, say, the big giants like Microsoft and Google in respect to what they do?
Of course.
They're going to be looking at going, oh, are we going to get our hands slapped? Are we going to have to pay Apple some money here?
Well, Microsoft will have paid, that they'll have to be careful.
Microsoft have paid Apple for using patented things, and that was one of the reasons why Samsung was stung so hard, is because they looked at Microsoft, they pointed to Microsoft and said they wanted to use that, so they paid for it. You should have done that. Smack.
Mm.
So that was, I don't think it'll change much for Microsoft. If you want to use something, you've got to pay for it.
Correct.
But are Apple allowing people to license those particular patents?
Microsoft has, so there must be.
Okay.
There's probably a bit of, if you let us have that one, we'll let you have this one type.
Maybe,
Backdoor handshake type sort of thing. In a statement, Samsung basically said that it was unfortunate that the patent law can be manipulated to give one company a monopoly over rectangles with rounded corners.
That was my complaint, your
job there.
I've been shot down on that. So,
anyway, Apple also said it intended to seek sales injunctions at a follow-up hearing on the 20th of September. And also, one of the other issues coming to the forefront now, it will lead to fewer choices, less innovation, and potentially higher prices.
Less innovation, lol. I can't copy other people, so therefore I cannot innovate. That's not what innovation is. Innovation's thinking things up by yourself.
Oh, that's, yeah, but you...
So, no, that is true. Look up the definition of innovation.
I understand what you're saying, and I know the definition of innovation, but you also can't promote innovation by trying to shut down the opposition.
I don't think they're trying to shut down the opposition. But several commentators have come out and said exactly the opposite of what Samsung has said, and that is that this will promote innovation because people know they can't copy.
Yeah, it makes you do something
different.
And
it's going to make people think a little bit more rather than jump and say, oh, look, we want to slide to unlock. And
necessity is the mother of invention.
We could see some good stuff. We could see some good stuff.
I just worry that these patents, a lot of them appear to me to be incredibly generic.
Yeah.
That's my concern. That's exactly
there were touchscreen devices long, long, long before the iPad came along or any of Apple's products came along. We had, you know, you used to make stuff in showrooms, Andrew. You know, you had touchscreens. You touch a screen to press a button or to scroll to the next screen or something like that. If Apple has been allowed to register extraordinarily generic patents like sliding your finger on a touchscreen to do something,
but yeah, it's almost and that's a very good example. If you actually go and look up and read what that patent says, and it says a way of unlocking a device by using a touchscreen where there's an image that you move from one place to another place. I mean, that basically says you can't unlock a device with a touchscreen no matter what you do.
Because you can't touch the screen and move your finger. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's generic.
Far too generic
that
and
kind
too
of
obvious.
That stuff is silly. But I'm not super familiar with each individual patent. I only know
worth going
about
and having a read
this,
and seeing
this, law like this particular finding was all that I've looked up.
One of the things that I sort of am a bit bewildered about is like if you look at a trademark, for example, you can't register common words in a trademark because of the fact that we use them in day-to-day speech. And hence the reason why you get a lot of
misspelled common words.
Exactly, misspelled and abbreviations with a logo. So you can register the design of a logo with those words in it, but that's as far as it goes. You can't register common usage words. So what's the difference between that and an action? Like if someone, you know...
Well, it's a completely different law precedent. But
if the police in one state put their hand up to go stop and then the other guys have to have a... You know, they can't do exactly the same thing. It's an action, isn't it?
You're not supposed to be able to patent things that are obvious and things that are a natural progression from things that already exist. So if you've already got a touchscreen and you've already got icons on it, then the progression from that to touching an icon to move it is it should be obvious and shouldn't be patentable. But they, because Apple have got, you know, multi-gazillion dollars lawyers behind them, they get these things forced through. And then they try and enforce them and wipe out the competition. Some of it's fair and some of it's not.
Yeah, but some of it's a matter of just getting in there first, I think.
It's also worth
pointing. That's what patents are all about. If you do get there first and you come up with something that's genuinely new and innovative, then that's fine. And you deserve to be able to have your opportunity to get a return on that. But you shouldn't be able to patent things that are either obvious or natural progressions from things that already exist, that, you know, really obvious progressions.
It's interesting, and it's probably worth noting, that Apple initially sought $2.5 billion in damages, of which only got $1.05 billion in damages. So
I'll take the rest if they don't want it.
The change.
Take the spare change.
Yep.
Yeah. Look, I guess let's not labour the point too much, but certainly it's the end of a very long road for Apple and Samsung.
No, it's not.
They've been in 19...
This is not the end.
No, you're right. You're absolutely right. But they've been in 19... countries fighting it all out. They've finally got a verdict in the United States. It's going to roll out across other countries in various forms, whether they think, yeah, you copied it or no, you didn't. And of course, then we've got the joys of seeing what happens with the pricing of technology and the likes, and whether it will stifle, whether it will promote creativeness in other tech companies. So lots to look forward to, really. But you're right, Graham. It's going to continue on and on and on and across many flavors and many different organizations.
Many different countries. It's being fought on a number of different battlegrounds, not just the United States.
Going to change the subject to something that's near and dear to my heart. and then we'll talk about something that's near and dear to Graham's heart, and then we'll go to a break. How about that?
And then it's near and dear to my heart.
Yes. Hey. Yes. Yes, that's right.
Then Ron.
With, as you know, I'm involved in the television industry, have been for some time. There was
you
a new
make the pictures.
A new standard has been ratified.
Ooh.
For broadcast of like high def is so yesterday. It's like 3D. 3D is so yesterday. What do you think the new standard is?
4K.
You're wrong. Keep going.
2K.
No,
2K. 8K.
8K is the new ratified high definition standard, which wow. is absolutely astounding. Now, let's talk about what these Ks mean. We're talking about pixels. One pixel element is a dot of light on a screen, except yep. on a retina screen because you can't see it.
It's the smallest amount of information on a screen. It doesn't have any detail, so that you make up detail by having lots of these dots.
Yeah. Now, we talk about high-definition television in broad number. Well, 1980 by 1080, 1920 by 1080 is what Thank we you. See high-definition television. Let's call that 2K for the want of a better terminology.
We start
just
with
shy of.
We start with the old standard definition, which is
you want to start down
576, just to give a bit of context.
Ah, yes. All right.
And then you go to high-def in Australia and most of the world at the moment, people call high-definition 720 or 1,080 lines. We're talking about how many lines of pixels there are.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what we call high def.
That's lowest entry. 720
is the is they still call high definition.
Yeah.
You can watch higher than standard definition.
SBS, I think, is the only television station in this country to run 720p, progressive. Everybody else runs 1080i, interlaced.
Mm.
That's what the I's and the P stand for. A P is like your computer screen. It's progressive. It doesn't do the interlace sort of thing. Anyway, moving
That's
on.
That's a complicated discussion for another
it
day,
is, It is, and I'll nerd alert myself in the same thing. Yes. But we're moving up from standard def, which is what yep. you mentioned before, Graham, to high definition, which is what we have today, which yep. is around 2K.
Yeah, and it's now, also similar. Yeah, when you go to the... Yeah, so the cinema is different, but when you go to the cinema to see a normal digital movie, it's 2K,
yep.
which is pretty close to being... Now, cinemas talk about... In television, you talk about how many lines high the picture is.
Yep.
So 1080 is the highest high definition that's being broadcast at the moment and on Blu-ray discs and things.
Yep.
In cinema, they talk about the horizontal resolution. So the 1080 high definition picture is 1920 wide, which is nearly 2,000, which is the cinema picture is 2,000 pixels wide.
Yep.
So that's roughly equivalent to high definition on your television is what you normally see in the cinema when you watch a digital film, 2K.
Yep.
And the better digital standard, the higher definition cinema standard, is 4K.
Indeed.
Now they say in the cinema industry that 2K is roughly equivalent to 35mm film.
Yeah, roughly.
And that the 4K picture is roughly equivalent to 70mm film, which were the really... outstanding, beautiful pictures you used to
see. Then 8K's got to be IMAX.
Well, I guess that must be the progression. Because that's what I was thinking. I mean, if you think of 4K as being roughly equivalent to being a 70mm film, that's about as good as film got. Film was pretty good at 70mm.
It was. Well, let's talk pixels again.
When you're not talking about cinemas, you're talking about 8K.
We're talking about television. Yeah.
Yeah, which is ridiculous.
Now,
yeah.
I have had the pleasure of watching TV on a 4K screen, which I thought was mind-blowing about a year or so back. I thought, wow, look at that. That's just stunning. But now to have 8K screens. Now, we go back to the pixel scenario that we were talking about before. 8K or UHD. D ultra high definition TV supports 7,680 pixels by 4,320 pixels at a 120 frame per second frame rate. So they've also upped the frames, the number of images in that same sort of category. So I think it's something to look forward to. It's not going to come out overnight. So if you've bought your new telly and you've gone, oh no,
oh,
not
no,
again.
Okay, oh no.
Don't stress.
Take it back.
Don't no.
Yeah.
Ring up Sony. You are never ever going to see the difference in your home.
You are
never going to get a big enough picture in your home to see the difference between even 2K and 4K, let alone 8K.
It's going to be a massive TV set for your wall. It's going to be like looking at the whole house. That like imagine roof to ceiling. It is going to be like IMAX in the living room.
Weird Al Yankovic song about a 2,000-inch TV, and this is it.
This is obviously going to have ramifications for bandwidth. and our networks get the 8K pictures to our televisions.
Let's don't talk about our current television network. It can't even get HD to our television
sets. Get normal HD to our TV sets. Yeah. Mm. So when do we expect to see this in reality? Because this is an agreement for a format.
Look,
or for a standard.
They've ratified the standard now.
This has been manufacturers can now go and start producing equipment.
We'll start seeing. There are prototypes out there now. Most of the Panasonics and all those big guys have got their prototypes out there now, which you can see just do a Google. But as for real-world applications, it's going to be a few years off yet.
Yeah.
I would be thinking, don't stress. Don't think you have to hold off and get one because it's going to be a while down the track.
Just quickly, speaking of our broadcasters, you know how I was moaning about Channel 9's Olympic coverage.
You and 32,000 other people, yes.
Before the Olympics started, I said I wanted the ABC to be in charge of broadcasting it.
Yes.
They're doing the Paralympics.
They are.
So I finally get my Olympic fix. I'm going to be watching the Paralympics on ABC.
I think you'll be alone, actually.
No. I think lots of people
are
going to.
You look at the rubbish that's on commercial television.
I love the Paralympics. I'm excited.
Big Brother was too tacky for Channel 10. Marvel at the concept, and it's popped back up again on Channel 9.
Yeah, I haven't had a look at surveys of recent times, but the Oztam ratings must be amazing at the moment. So no wonder people are going online. Doctor Who starts.
I wonder why people switch off the telly. Yeah.
Series 7, Ep 1, Doctor Who this Saturday night, BBC 1, 7:30.
The amount of people I know who don't actually own a TV these days, friends of mine, is insane. It used to be just sort of everyone had that hippie kid at school whose parents didn't have a TV and he wasn't allowed to watch TV. But now it's so many people don't have a television at all in the house.
Yeah, because you can still keep up with things without one. Yeah.
Yep.
Can I go back in the Wayback Machine? I'm digressing here. Sorry, Lena, if you feel marginalised, but you'll understand this in a minute.
Dr.
Ron, don't be ageist.
Dr. Ron, where were you when man walked on the moon? Do you remember where you were? I do. Do you remember where you were?
I was not even a twinkle in my parents' eye.
Oh, really? Are you that young?
I am.
I remember
young.
Where I was.
I'm only a couple of years older than Lena.
I'll
put my hand up on the old one. So none of you guys were around when he did his thing?
No, not when Apollo 11 was. I was around for some of the later missions, but I was so young I don't remember.
I'm not going to say how old I was at the time because that's a giveaway. But I do remember my mother at the time saying, come and watch this. And I'm going, couldn't give her two hoots. I was out the front making mud pies and car things and stuff like that. Yeah, yeah.
This is like when you were 16 or 17.
Yeah, making mud pies.
Absolutely. Correct. You got it in one.
I was there, sorry.
So
if I didn't, someone else would have.
Yeah, correct. So there you go. It's and television back in those days, a little black and white box, which you were lucky to have. Mm. A lot of people had, you know, remember school TVs in schools back then? They were on a trolley, I think, and they wheeled them from classroom to classroom. And if you're lucky, your school had one. I'm showing my age now.
We had a black and white TV. We had a Chrysler. That was the model.
That's a car, isn't it?
No, this was...
Chrysler made televisions.
Yeah, Chrysler made TVs.
And cars.
And
had a Daewoo monitor in 1998. It's terrible.
They make cars too.
Yeah, they do.
Anyway.
It was terrible.
I remember getting the first colour TV in 1975 in Australia. That was...
Wow. Yeah, and watching the cricket.
1975.
The cricket was on. It was the first thing I watched in colour was the... Come on, Aussie, come on.
I was at the play school stage then.
Were you?
Play school stage at 1975. I'm running this down.
I was watching Kerry Packer.
Detailed reconnaissance.
Yeah.
Can I put something else in the mix that just puts the high definition stuff into perspective?
Certainly.
In 1936, when BBC in the UK, this is when television was going through rapid development in the early part of that century. 1936, they started up a new television service that had 405 line resolution.
Was that the French system?
405 lines. No. That was an EMI system.
Really?
In the UK, yeah. It was the electronic scan EMI system that took over after Logie Baird's mechanical scan system wasn't cutting it.
Did you say Yogi Bear?
Yeah, I thought he said Yogi Bear.
What?
No, he didn't. Beard. He said Logie Baird.
Right.
So smart as the average bear. Yeah.
So 405 lines, whereas what we call standard definition now is 625 lines. Can you guess what they called that new service when they brought it in?
No.
The 405 line service?
Can I have a guess?
Yeah, you
high
can.
Definition?
High definition.
There you go.
Whoa. That was what it was called.
Oh, fantastic. our chat's gone to line. A few people obviously showing their age in the chat. I'm having a look here. Roo, who said, I wag school to see it.
Oh, there you go.
I think you wouldn't have been the only one, Ruhu. A lot of people probably wouldn't would have done that. His first television was an HMV.
Oh, so yeah. was mine.
They had a record company or a record label. It's a dog and a gramophone, isn't it? Yeah.
His master's cars, voice. Too.
Yeah.
HMV did not make cars.
Well, you had one too.
I had one. Yeah, I had an HMV.
Yeah. Ray had an Amiga 500. What's he talking about now?
I think the colour one. I think the colour TV we got in 1975 was a Rank Arena.
Ooh.
Remember the Rank Arena?
Yeah. 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 Ours was a Baird.
Was it?
As in Logie Baird. Yeah.
Really?
Baird colour TV. First one we had.
Really? I can't remember ours.
Do you remember the old...
I just remember colour. It was great.
The parody electronics names on The Simpsons. Like Panaphonix and Magnet Box. No one? No? Showing my age again. That's all right.
You're showing your age now.
You were like out being a grown up at that stage, and I was still watching The Simpsons at home.
We were watching.
Would you like to check your Medicare card at the door and keep going? Wear your heart on your sleeve here. All right. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're not taking a break. We're going to talk about the Astor Cinema here in town because whilst we're on the subject of televisions and high definitions, and you gave a great segue before, which I didn't use because you're talking about film resolution and stuff like that.
That's right.
We have here in our city of Melbourne, we used to have the Valhalla Cinema. Now, whatever happened to the Valhalla?
I've no idea what happened to the Valhalla. I don't have a personal history with the Valhalla.
Because that used to be where you used to go and watch the Blues Brothers down. And they threw rice and they did all sorts of great things like that.
They do that at the Astor too, like the Rocky Horror Picture Show.
Yeah, I'm sure every city has one, and we've got one in town. It's called the Astor
Cinema. It's a beautiful old building. It's been a cinema since forever, and they still have show old classic films.
It's got to be film, isn't it? They don't have just digital stuff.
They do have digital.
Do they?
They have. Not only do they have digital, they have 2K and 4K digital, but they also have
country and western.
Yeah, they also have. This is important. But they have a fantastic big screen. And a big auditorium, auditorium, the like in the old days, two levels. You know, you can sit in the posh seats or down the bottom with a riffraff.
Does the cat go to sleep? But on they your also, lap?
They do have a cinema cat. They also have proper film projectionists and projectors and equipment, 35mm and 70mm, one of the very few places left, probably in the world, that still shows 70mm films regularly.
The cat's
and
name
they
is
look
Marzipan.
Astonishing. Yeah. If you've never seen a proper 70mm film, you need to get down to the Astor for one of their showings of those
they
films.
Are great.
Or if you have a local cinema, go and check it out.
But what's happened is they were under some threat. The building's basically falling down around them. The roof leaks. The building's been owned by the local school, a private school, for a long, long time. And there's been all questions about what the future's going to be, whether the school's going to gut it and turn into a big assembly hall or a school, put on school plays in there, or what they were going to do with it. And just this end of last week, they've had a bloke come in who's a cinema lover who owns other cinemas.
He owns the Brighton something or other,
doesn't
he?
And this guy who's his name is Ralph Taranto, has bought the cinema from the school. Bought the building, so
they're
going to keep the business that's in there running the cinema is going to stay, and the guy that's running it is going to continue to run the cinema, which is great. That side of the business, he's got that tenant all worked out. He's going to restore the building, bring it back to its former glory, and the guy's a cinema lover, so it's really good for Melbourne, really Excellent. Good for cinema lovers in Melbourne, and. If you're in Melbourne, get down there and have a look at a good film shown the old-fashioned way with a chalk top.
Yeah.
In the dark, it goes down the front. Don't wear a white shirt. Tip.
Yeah, it doesn't matter.
my favourite cinema experience was in, I think it's the Sunrise Cinema in Broome, in the deck chairs, in the open-air cinema up there. That was just, I'll never forget that experience.
I found out what happened to the Valhalla.
Oh, yeah, what happened?
It moved from Victoria Street, Richmond to High Street, Westgarth.
Is it still there,
it's
though?
It's the Palace Westgarth now.
Yeah, but it closed.
Yeah. Oh, did it?
But yeah.
Because I used to remember the old Blues. Every Friday night or Saturday night, it used to run the Blues Brothers there. It was just like a religion. Everyone would go there.
It was
for
a cult. Had a cult following.
Yeah, and they show Blues Brothers down at the Astor now. So
oh, do they? There you go, Andy Began down there.
For a showing of that. For sure, and classic films and modern films. Their program is very varied, and you know, it's really a place for cinema lovers. So all those people that I said before to come down to Melbourne to go to the games exhibition, go to the Astor while you're in town.
Yeah, do that. Mm. Yeah, make a good 2 days of it or something like that. All right, you're listening to Tech Talk Radio. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to have a bit of a view from the couch. And for all you projectionists out there, just remember, when the ghosts get up, it's late.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Oh, what does this button do? Hello, everybody.
But I buck the trend on the hive mind that is Tech Talk Radio.
Which is patently absurd.
It is absurd, exactly right.
But anyway, my point is...
moving along.
My point is...
And why do you have to change the phone number?
That's a good question, Dr. Ron. Why?
If they're that clueless, they should not be answering the phone.
I can't see a blue tin. I can't see a blue tin.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
Just in case you missed something, want to hear a discussion again, or even if you wanted to indulge in the Tech Talk Radio extended mix, then subscribe to the Tech Talk Radio podcast. You'll find a link on the website, techtalkradio.com.au, or subscribe on iTunes. You can also have a repeat of the current show streamed live to your device by visiting stitcher.com or by visiting the Tech Talk Radio small screen site, m.techtalkradio.com.au. Tech Talk Radio, it's everywhere you need it.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In other news, this past week, Microsoft has a new logo. As we were talking about briefly in the opening of the show, Leans, they've squared it up. No longer have we got that slight lean to the right. They've squared it up and changed the font, made it a little bit more thinner.
Well, the lean to the right, the funny shape version with the squares was always the Windows logo, but not the Microsoft logo.
Yeah.
That's true, the colours, wasn't it?
So, yeah, it was a Windows logo. It was a logo of the product, but not the logo for all of Microsoft. So what they've done is they've created a very square, very plain, no borders, no nothing, just the plain blocks of colour.
And apparently
very metro-looking, if I dare say.
Colour represents...
No, you dare not say that. It's not called metro.
Every
what
colour
used to be called metro?
Bloody is.
Each colour represents a certain part of the company, apparently.
Oh, really?
So the red is office, the green is Xbox, something, 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 something.
Really? Yeah. I thought that was an urban myth.
Corporate spin. Mm. So they've sort of backwards... engineered that onto the logo they'd already chosen, I suspect.
Yeah. Well, probably because they're going to say that's a Windows logo, not a Microsoft logo. And they'll say, well, I beg to differ. It's an Xbox and an Office logo. Mm.
Coles, the supermarket chain, has rolled out near-field monitoring, or is in the pros and cons of rolling out the near-field stuff of doing your payments. Obviously, this is coming up because I think the iPhone 5 is going to have it all built in and all the new handsets coming out. So you can attach your payment method of choice to your phone. So you just wave your phone across it. I got my daughter rather bemused the other day because I went to Officeworks and I bought something. And I didn't get my card out of my wallet. I just put my wallet on the near field monitor thing and it said, thank you very much. How did you do that?
Whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. How'd you do that? I said, it's magic. It's technology for you. So anyway, Coles are on the game. Three domain names were seized for Android app piracy. I thought this was rather interesting. I don't know if anyone heard of this. I don't know the actual domain names, but pirating of Android apps, they're normally pretty cheap, aren't they? How would you pirate an Android app? Does anyone have any...
Oh, same way you would otherwise.
Yeah, obviously copy it and stick it up on somewhere.
Download it, you'd remove the copy protection and stick it up somewhere else, yeah.
Yeah, well, the domain names were appplanet.net, appbucket.net, and snapsmarket.com, and they were seized by the US government, and obviously they were foisting... nasty things.
Were they like renegade play stores, were they?
I guess
sounds like it.
I guess so. Hmm. So we're probably going to see a lot more of that as app stores become more of a way of life, I guess, in technology. Parliament House gets free Wi-Fi. You wouldn't have thought they'd pay for it up there anyway. What else would the pollies do if they can't sit and surf the net and check their emails in Parliament?
Which Parliament?
I guess it's the big white one in the hill in Canberra.
A federal Parliament, is it?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So
does that mean you can tweet from the gallery?
Well, I don't know. You might. Yes, I don't know.
Aren't there security issues or something?
I'm well, sure it's encrypted web traffic and all that sort of stuff that's going to be going through there. So I suspect you'll need to. It might be free for the police, but they'll need to log in to use all that sort of stuff. So, and speaking of Wi-Fi, this will make one of our regular listeners, Andy B, cringe there. And I'm just trying to find it because it was in the. I saw it go through tonight. But apparently, the trains in Melbourne, metro trains, are going to bring free Wi-Fi trial.
Yes.
For railway.
Finally.
Might keep the crime rate down because it'll give the kiddie something to do. Well, actually, no, they can.
Well, no,
they
they'll have to steal your phone so they can. Yeah, they'll have to steal your phone so they've so got
they
to.
They can put their trophy pics up online as they surf the train. Mm. Yeah,
I've wanted this for ages because when you go through the City Loop and you get a complete blackout, you think, well, it's 2012.
We talked about this in Sydney the other day. You know, Sydney were doing all this sort of stuff, and they've got it on the ferries, but now it's Melbourne's turn, and we've got it on trains. It says Melbourne trains have kicked off a 3-month trial of free Wi-Fi services, and this is at Melbourne's Flinders Street Station. That's the one everyone sees on the telly. Metro Trains announced on Friday this year its intention to trial a free Wi-Fi service, but the start-up over the trial has come later than first expected. So,
Andy B says, ugh.
Does he? He does indeed. So, and I think it's all...
So it's not on the trains. It's only at the
station. It's only at the station, at this point in time. So
what's the point of that?
It's no point at
all. Yeah. Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see if they do roll it out onto trains or other platforms, but I believe it's all sponsored.
Platforms, get
lol.
Ad-supported type sort of thing.
I got that one.
Oh, good. Oh, good. You didn't go through the keeper. Excellente. All righty then. Now...
If it's on the platform, they're not encouraging... they are encouraging loitering, which all that loud music is supposed to... discourage.
Really?
Don't you think?
And they haven't caught a train for ages. Someone told me they weren't safe.
The fact that they don't run their trains on time also encourages
that
loitering.
That too. Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Well, here in Melbourne, they're taking to driving cars on train tracks at the moment. But anyway, that's another story. Travelling with technology. Do you do it? Lean, you've travelled with it. What do you take with you?
iPad.
Yeah?
Perfect for in-flight entertainment.
Well, Qantas think so too. Mm. They're rolling them out. They're doing a trial. Dr. Ron, what do you travel with when you travel with... technology.
Depends where I'm going. Yeah.
Take the car with
doing.
You. Pack it all in. Yeah. Away you go. I tend to take the wireless hotspot and my laptops and stuff like that.
Mobile phones essential. Yeah. Remember your charger. That's always a wall charger is essential.
Yep.
Spare battery if you've got one.
Graham?
Kindle and an iPod full of podcasts that I need to catch up on.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't travel all that often though. So.
Yeah. So what about if you were buying something to travel? You were about to head off overseas. Would you be buying something to take with you or would you take something you already had?
Depends on the product I wanted, because I might buy duty free, say if I wanted a new camera or something like that.
Duty free.
I might get a good bargain by perhaps if I was flying through Singapore or something. Yeah. I definitely would.
Adam Turner, our regular, has been agonising over this. Absolutely agonising.
Is he going somewhere?
Is he travelling? Maybe. There's emails around at the moment. Maybe he is travelling. Anyway, this might give you a clue. Here's this week's view from the couch.
Adam Turner's View from the Couch.
I recently went in search of the perfect gadget for my travel bag, and what I found surprised me. With some interstate and international travel lined up for later in the year, I decided it was time to make some tough decisions regarding my mobile computing needs. I've been considering my options for quite a while, as my old 13.3-inch MacBook is getting a bit long in the tooth and also a bit hard on the shoulder at 2.5 kilos plus the charger. I recently upgraded to a hand-me-down 17-inch MacBook Pro, but of course at that size it's even less travel-friendly, plus it's already rather battered, which is why it was a hand-me-down. Thankfully, the days of lugging around a cumbersome desktop replacement are long gone, so we're spoiled for choice when it comes to travel-friendly gadgets. But there's no one-size-fits-all mobility solution. Basically, I've been paralysed by choice, trying to decide between a netbook, an ultrabook, or a tablet. I've tested plenty in the last few years, and they all have their strengths and weaknesses. In the end, I forced myself to list my requirements and prioritise them, as you really should do before contemplating any major tech purchase. Once you've got a clear idea of why you need a gadget and which features are important to you, it's much easier to narrow down your options. If you're primarily after a gadget for play, then it's pretty hard to go past a tablet or maybe even a large smartphone. In terms of everyday consumer features, an Apple or high-end Android tablet can do pretty much everything a notebook can do. Plus, tablets are generally smaller, cheaper, lighter, and offer longer battery lives. I already own a first-generation iPad, which was shipped over from the US, which is what was making my mobility choice so difficult. Every time I contemplated a cheap netbook or a powerful notebook, I kept wondering whether simply adding a wireless keyboard to my iPad would do the trick. The on-screen keyboard on the iPad might be fine for bashing out a quick email, but I can't stand typing on a slab of glass for extended periods. Personally, I think people who throw away their MacBooks for iPads are crazy. At the end of the day, I had to concede that a tablet-style operating system wasn't going to cut it for me as a portable work device. Every time I envisioned myself stuck on the other side of the world with nothing but an iPad, I kept thinking of scenarios where I'd lament the lack of a full desktop operating system and browser. Your mileage may vary, but I find my work-focused, multitasking, standard operating environment works much more smoothly on Windows or Mac OS than on iOS or Android. There's also the fact that some of the content management systems I work with can only be accessed via a desktop browser. I know tablets are better than notebooks for some tasks, and I'm sure some people can easily do their entire job on an iPad. I've got an iPhone in my pocket for tasks which are well suited to iOS, such as quickly checking my email on the run. But limiting myself to a smartphone and a tablet was going to make life harder rather than easier. I really needed something with a desktop operating system and a decent keyboard. So, that left me to choose between a MacBook or a Windows notebook. My primary workhorse is the MacBook Pro, and I'm a Mac user, but I'm not a Mac fanboy, and I'm happy to jump between devices and operating systems. I actually think Windows 7 is pretty good. As I said last week, I'm not convinced Windows 8 will be a great option for the desktop, although I can certainly see its appeal on mobile touchscreen devices. When I think about it, a Windows 8 Surface Pro tablet is probably exactly what I'm looking for, something that's slick and portable like a tablet, but can also run traditional desktop applications and talk to a wireless keyboard. It would be the equivalent of an iPad which ran both iOS and macOS. But we won't see Surface Pro tablets until at least Christmas, and I'm sure they'll be expensive to start with. If money was no object, then I would have just bought myself a MacBook Air. But they start at $1,100, and that's a lot to spend on something that's only going to be a travel companion and not my primary workhorse. If I bought a MacBook Air, I'd still probably want to upgrade my old MacBook Pro in the next few years. A new 15-inch MacBook Pro is going to cost me at least another $2,000. Not really in a position to buy both a MacBook Air and a MacBook Pro in the next few years. But choosing between them was another one of those paralyzing decisions which had caused me to put the entire mobility shopping debate in the too hard basket. My travel companion won't be my primary workhorse, so I don't really mind if it runs Windows, nor does it need to have a lot of grunt. After some soul searching, I convinced myself that I should hold off on a MacBook Air and instead put the funds towards upgrading to a new 15-inch MacBook Pro in a year or two, which will become my new workhorse. Once I convinced myself that I didn't actually need a MacBook Air as a travel companion, I was faced with the old Windows netbook notebook conundrum. Powerful, lightweight ultrabooks are about as expensive as a MacBook Air though. Meanwhile, standard notebooks are just as bulky as my 13.3-inch MacBook, and cheap netbooks are ultra-portable but they lack grunt and they lack features. Finding the best solution here means balancing size and price against usability and features. I've found that once you get below a 13.3-inch display, you can run into some major usability issues. Keep in mind, I spend my days typing, so for me the keyboard is the make or break feature of any portable productivity device. I've been far from impressed with the keyboard and trackpad on most of the netbooks and ultrabooks I've tested over the last few years. It really seems like usability is an afterthought when it comes to building these ultra portable devices. I have to confess that the little 11.6-inch MacBook Air certainly offers the best keyboard and trackpad I've used at that size, but let's not get stuck on that MacBook Air versus MacBook Pro debate again. So, at this point, I'm looking for a Windows netbook or notebook that wasn't horrible to type on, but also wasn't so expensive that I'd regret not just buying a MacBook Air instead. I set myself a rough budget of $500 to $600 and went searching for options. I was actually quite surprised by what I found. All the focus on netbooks and ultrabooks has really driven down the price of ordinary notebooks. Not just clunky everyday notebooks, but also these 11.6-inch 20s which are considered too big and powerful to be a netbook, yet too big and slow to be an ultrabook. At around the $500 mark, you start to find 11.6-inch notebooks running Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit with 2GB of RAM on an Intel Core 2 Duo or maybe an AMD E-series processor. That's pretty good value when you consider for almost the same money, you can get yourself a 10-inch netbook running Windows 7 Starter on an Atom processor with less RAM and a lower screen resolution. After scanning a few online stores and comparing a few models, HP's 11.6-inch Pavilion DM14108AU caught my eye. At 1.45 kilos, it's not much heavier than a netbook, but it's got an AMD 1.6 GHz processor which offers more grunt than a netbook, and it runs Windows 7 Home Premium 64-bit. The best thing is that it features an empty RAM slot, so it's easy to upgrade from the default 2GB of RAM. There's no optical drive, of course, but it features HDMI and VGA video outputs along with Ethernet, USB and SD card slot. It has at least a 5-hour battery life and, more importantly for me, a decent keyboard and trackpad. Of course, that's something that I needed to test out for myself, so I found a display model at JB Hi-Fi and tested it out for a while, where it was selling at a ridiculous $398, although it was even cheaper a couple of weeks ago. After using it in the shop for 20 minutes, I was sold on this notebook. The keyboard's a little clackety, but the keys are well spaced so my fingers don't trip over each other, and unlike some notebooks, the keyboard doesn't flex in the middle, and it doesn't fail to register keystrokes if I type too quickly. The trackpad has separate left and right buttons, which is much less frustrating to use than some of the cheap and nasty Ultrabooks I've tested. So I paid an extra $30 for 2GB more of RAM and walked away with my new travel companion. It really pays to do your research when doing something like this. I could have spent the same money on a netbook or a tablet, or spent a lot more money on an Ultrabook and still not be as happy as I am with this little HP notebook. What's really interesting is that I was actually offered a review unit of this exact notebook 6 months ago, but I knocked it back. The reason why is the editor that I pitched it to wasn't interested in it because it wasn't a tiny little netbook or a sexy Ultrabook. So, Andrew McCollum buys a MacBook and I buy a PC. The world is spinning out of control. In fact, I think this is the first computer I've ever bought that wasn't more powerful than the last one. No, it's not a MacBook Air, but I found myself a bargain that will happily serve me as a travel companion. Really, I should have bought it months ago, but I was just too paralyzed by the difficult choices between tablets, netbooks, and ultrabooks. If you're looking for the perfect travel companion, it pays to do your research and look beyond the usual suspects.
Entertaining, informative, and independent. You're listening to Tech Talk Radio. Tech Talk Games with Lena Van Deventer.
It gets stuck in your head.
It does.
I have news.
You want to tell everyone what the theme is?
This is Plants vs. Zombies.
Easy.
And I have news.
And you're responsible for making us waste many hours in the studio. That's here they come, right. Here come the zombies.
Brains. About an hour after I left the studio last week.
How unfortunate was this?
I know. After talking about Plants vs. Zombies on the air, I leave the studio, I get home, I check Twitter, and Twitter is abuzz. Are you ready to soil your plants? Lol. Plants vs. Zombies 2 is scheduled for release next year.
Yay!
It's good news.
New very zombies, news. New plants.
Yep, new everything. For release in, it'll be our autumn. It'll be the Northern Hemisphere's spring, 2013. A sequel to PopCap's 2009 tower defense style game Plants vs. Zombies will be available. The company announced last week.
I guess lawnmower.
2 hours after I left. That's your final layer of defense.
The lawnmower. Yeah. I guess lawnmower.
So March, April, May-ish for us.
Yes, should be, yeah. The untitled Plants vs. Zombies sequel will include new features, settings and situations, but that's all they've said. They've not given us any teasers yet. They've not given us any information on what it's going to be. They've just said there'll be new features, settings and situations. So, that'll be interesting. The original Plants vs. Zombies launched, like I said before, in 2009 for the PC and Mac first, and then subsequent versions came out on iOS, Android, Xbox Live Arcade, PlayStation Network, Windows Phone and PlayStation Vita. It's absolutely made for the touchscreen, so it was great that it made its way over to those devices. You can have hours of fun with just the soundtrack. Oh,
absolutely.
This. Yeah. So start saving now. It won't be worth much. It won't be too much out of your pocket. It won't be like a AAA title, but it'll be definitely worth every penny. Where am I? The Ubisoft or Ubisoft CEO, claims 93 to 95% piracy rate on its PC games. Lena says... oh my goodness, it's Crazy Dave!
Crazy Dave.
Okay, enough now. Walk away from the thing.
Settle.
The Ubisoft CEO claims a 93 to 95% piracy rate on its PC games. Lena says, citation needed.
How does it know that?
Yes, how can you possibly measure that kind of a figure? The Ubisoft CEO, now I'm going to ruin this, so I apologize to any French people listening. Yves Guillemot has told Games Industry International that paying players for its PC retail games and its free-to-play products are roughly equivalent. The executive said about 5 to 7% of free-to-play gamers purchase content from its games, which he claimed is about the same as paying users for its PC games, given a 93 to 95% piracy rate. He went on to explain quite, you know, lacklusterly, that free-to-play offerings tend to be cheaper to produce and distribute, but noted these projects must still be made to fit the audience's desires. He says, we also take content which we've developed in the past, graphics, etc., and we can make cheaper games and improve them over time, he said. What's very important is that we change the content and make it a better fit to the customer as time goes on. And we take all your money. That was a little bit I added on the end there, just so you don't
He
sue
didn't
me.
Actually say that.
He didn't say that, no. He would have said, and then we take all your money.
That's what he would have said.
Then.
Yeah. I don't know where he pulled that figure from, but I think you should take that with
Inspector
a big grain of salt.
Clouseau.
I think that's his way of getting away with not making anything for consoles for a while and focusing on cheaper stuff to churn out while the economic downturn's happening. But that's just my little take on that. The ACT is the first Aussie territory to pass the R18 plus law.
Yes, this is good news.
Why wouldn't it be Canberra for that sort of stuff?
Exactly. The Australian Capital Territory has become the first jurisdiction in the country. People are saying the first state, but it's not a state, is it?
They've got a classification above that, but we won't talk about that, will we?
It's a territory.
It's a territory. Australian Capital Territory.
It's like the one that just changed leadership. Northern Territory.
Oh, right.
They had an election on the weekend. Did you not know?
I don't live there, so no.
Okay. Neither do I, but I knew.
Well, you're a man of the world. they've introduced the complementary R18 for games legislation following the national introduction of an adult classification earlier this year. Great news. The law was passed by the ACT Legislative Assembly this week. The ACT Attorney General Simon Corbell said he had discussed the legislation on numerous occasions with other state and territory attorneys general, as well as the federal government. He then said, the ACT government has been a strong supporter of this new classification. By having a regulated and closely monitored R18 industry for computer games, we can better protect those vulnerable members of our community by placing appropriate safeguards on the sale and distribution of adult-only gaming material.
Yes.
This will also provide those who consume such material with clearer information about the contents of adult-only games.
Yes.
Yay!
Is there any notation there as to when it will roll out in other states?
January 1st.
Across the board. Oh, everyone.
That's when the legislation will come into effect.
So the ACT's jumped the fridge?
No, I think they've just got the ball rolling
first. Just in time for Guy Fawkes.
So, in other words, between now and the end of the year, we should see similar legislation through all the various state and territory parliaments.
Yeah, I'd say that they're passing it all now.
Just before they go on their summer break.
Passing it all now so it's ready for January 1st.
Just in time not to protect any kids over Christmas.
Cynic.
Ouch. I said before that I don't live there, so I didn't know they were having an election. But I also don't live in the United States, and I know they're having an election, so I'm going to retract that. An election 2012 hub is coming to Xbox Live in the United States, and I find this really interesting. In Australia...
Which colour is this in the logo? The green?
The green,
okay.
Yeah.
You've got to clarify the colour now if you're going to talk about Microsoft.
Yep. In Australia, where voting's compulsory, it's really easy for us to forget the trouble that a lot of other countries have with actually getting their citizens to vote, especially with younger generations. There's this thing in the United States called Rock the Vote, where they get all these cool young people to encourage other cool young people to vote. There's two sides competing for points in this election, obviously, with a range of tactics to take down their opposition, and they'll all come to Xbox Live next week. They're all vying for the White House instead of Xbox leaderboards. The US election hub 2012 will receive its first wave of content on August 27. That's today for us. Oh my goodness. Showcasing a range of pre-order content as well as interactive polls. Just starting to be today there. Ah, there you go. Interactive polls and video streams from the upcoming Republic and Democratic National Conventions and elsewhere. Microsoft will collaborate with Rock the Vote after working together in 2008 election to offer voter registration through the service, which is interesting, as well as local information. The hub will also feature...
So can you vote on your Xbox?
No, but you can register to vote.
Ah, oh, come on. The red button or the green button? We can do it, guys.
The hub will also feature regular...
the red button or the blue button over there.
Oh, yes, exactly right. Green's Microsoft. Sorry, I forgot.
Regular Obama and Romney campaign coverage from NBCnews.com, daily polls from online market research agency YouGov, and contributions from public policy fact-finding group Face the Facts USA. Technology has been a transformative force in politics during recent years, said Fred Humphries, Vice President of Governmental Affairs at Microsoft. They have a Vice President of Governmental Affairs.
They've got a Vice President of Microsoft.
That doesn't surprise me at all. Yeah.
By bringing the elections directly into the home through this Xbox platform, we hope to encourage greater participation in the democratic process this fall.
And make more money. I added that bit.
I could probably get into myself in a lot of trouble here, but I would have thought there's a bit of apathy floating around in the US in relation to elections. Why do they think that the Xbox
barely get anybody to vote over there.
Correct. Why do they think the Xbox is going to do anything for it?
Because I think the younger generations are coming up and saying, no, this stuff's changing now.
Well, they need to put on their iGadget then rather than their X-Gadget.
I think the younger generations are going to be quite political, more so than the ones that have just come before.
Oh, I wish they would be.
If you're
an American and you're listening to this show, vote. Your country needs you and the world does. Vote, for goodness sake.
Educate yourself, then vote. Then your country will need you. Otherwise, you're doing nothing.
Hang on. They're listening to our program. They're doing all right, okay?
Yes. You would, of course, be educated. There's Crazy Dave. but I think it's a really interesting way to use such a platform. We're using our Xboxes and our consoles as real little hubs now. So I think it makes sense. And imagine if they have a little notification coming up saying, you know, you've got a week to register to vote or you won't be able to come the election. And it just comes up and reminds you.
Or once you're registered, it says, hey, voting booths are now open in your area.
It might remind you and tell you, hey, you should go vote and here's why. And maybe, if it's really clever, it shows you information relevant to your interest.
Americans vote in the middle of the week, don't they? Like it's on a Wednesday or something.
Is it?
I think I remember. I think Lyd had to go and vote in the middle
of
the week.
It is a working day.
Yeah.
Yeah, it is a working day.
And you go into the schools there and the kids are at school and you pop in to vote. Correct me if I'm wrong. Someone in the United States will be listening to us. They'll let us know. I think that's the case.
Yeah, I do think it is.
We do it on a Saturday here.
I've watched a lot of West Wing and it seems to be always a work day that the elections are held on because
that'd be right.
Only the diehards
It would be
vote
a work day for
work.
Those people.
Yeah, no, but only the diehards vote before work.
Someone says Tuesday in the chat, question mark.
Yeah, okay. Oh, Tuesday. They've got Super Tuesday, which is like the round of qualifiers.
The qualifying final. Yeah.
It's like a basketball game, isn't it? Like elimination.
A round robin.
Why do they do it in Big Brother style?
That's serious.
You voted out of the house.
Yeah, so I think that's a really cool way to use technology to speak to the young folk. The young folk, and to get them caring about politics a little bit. If it's very clever, if it's done really well, it
why don't
could
they
be really
start
good.
Building it into like the games? Tour of Duty or something like that. Vote now.
In Call of Duty?
Yeah.
No. Only 12-year-olds play that, so they can't vote.
Oh,
no. No. I don't know if I want it in games. I'm a games as art person.
It activates
on
election day.
Perhaps if they turned off all the game servers so that the kids actually sort of stood up and looked around them and get out and vote.
I think that inconveniences a lot of non-voters.
Ah.
But I do think... A lot of people turn up on election day in the US wanting to vote, and they haven't registered, so they can't.
Yeah, you don't get a sausage over there. Andy B in our chat said voting's so much better in Australia because you get the post voting sausage in bread.
Exactly.
Yeah,
it's Australian.
It's a very Australian thing to do.
So I think anything to make younger people register to vote's a good idea. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But I think it's cool.
Cool. Hmm. So you can do it on your Xbox.
Yeah.
Not vote.
You can register.
You can register to vote.
Yeah.
Good.
Which is something that other countries have to do. We forget about that.
Yeah.
It's compulsory here. AEC,
listen up.
AEC, listen up. We want electronic voting here. I don't want to have to get in my car and drive to a voting place.
Yeah. And draw it in pencil.
Crazy.
Can't be far off, surely.
But we need to make sure that, we need electronic voting and we need to make sure it's based on open source software so we can trust it because we do not trust commercial voting software.
We had an electronic census. We have electronic census procedures here. We can do that online. There's no reason, which would be 100 times more complicated. There's no reason why we can't vote electronically.
And there's much more personal information in census.
Of course there is.
Than there is in a vote. Yep. Like, I don't mind if anyone sees who I vote for. I really don't care.
Andy B wants to vote by SMS.
Yes. Ooh.
That's a concept.
Yeah.
Enter your PIN number and text away.
But then if you have two phones, can you vote twice?
Come on. If the Australian Bureau of Statistics can do it, then the Australian Electoral Commission, come on.
Yeah, I agree.
We don't, yeah.
Oh, he wants to turn the election into a money-making scheme. He wants to have premium SMS numbers.
Oh, look, the chat is... stick with us. It'll be great. The chat's right. Yeah, yes. SMS one number for one party and the other number for another party.
If you'd
party.
Like to vote out Labour, call.
Yeah.
Like Big Brother.
What else is happening?
That's about it.
Okay. That's the end of the gaming stuff? Excellent.
Yeah, I was really intrigued by that election hub coming to the Xbox. I think that's an interesting use of a gaming console.
Definitely.
Hmm.
I'm really looking forward to the new zombies and plants. When
plants
is it?
Me
too.
13th,
2013?
Yep.
So that's our autumn?
Our autumn. Oh, okay. Northern Hemisphere spring.
Oh, very good. Mm. Yes, it's a great game. We wasted lots of time on it. And you get your brains eaten at the end with zombies.
You didn't waste time because you enjoyed it. There it is. Zombies ate your brains. It didn't have the little... No! Oh, there it is. No!
That's what happens when a zombie eats your brains. Anyway, that's enough of that.
It wasn't a waste of time because you're having fun.
I know. Mm. But it's on all the platforms. That's on the iPad, it's on the Mac, it's on the PC, it's on all over the place. But anyway.
It's not on my Android phone.
No, I didn't go there. Oh. I don't think you can play it on a small device like that.
You can. I've played it on my iPhone before I played it on my iPad.
How do you do it? It'd be so small. And,
No, it's good.
Digital radio. Do you know what that is?
Radio that's digital.
It had its third third birthday last week.
Happy birthday.
How time flies when you're having fun. Have you got a digital radio? Built one, didn't you, Graham?
I built one, yeah, I did.
Do you use it?
No.
Yeah. Okay. Dr. Ron, have you got one?
I don't. I do want a digital clock radio.
Yeah.
And I've tried a number of times to buy one, but I'm yet to find one that does what I want it to
do. Gets rid of the buzz and the AM band, but that's about it.
Yeah, but I can't find one that's cheap. All I want is a digital clock radio.
Yep.
And I've spent so much time and wasted so much time going through consumer electronics stores trying to find something that's under like $280, and I can't find one. So I haven't got one, no.
Lena, have you got one?
No.
No. I got one in the office, but that's as far as I've gone. And believe it or not, mostly I use it for internet streaming as opposed to if I want to listen to something which is not on digital radio. Like, there's lots of choices. There's lots of channels. But like everything, like the commercial TV broadcasters, I think they've sacrificed quality for quantity. So there's lots of channels, but they're all pretty ordinary data rates. So not that I've listened that much.
Yeah.
That's purely speculative stuff. But anyway, the industry turned three the other day.
So they've had three,
they're trying to talk it up.
3 years. When are they getting their third listener?
Well, good question. Good question. According to the ABC, about 10% of the audience currently listen via digital radio.
I don't believe that for a second.
No, I don't believe that.
Okay.
So 1%.
Are they including when you listen on a digital device?
No, I think they're saying over broadcast over DAB Plus, which is using that technology.
No, I don't believe
I would
that
believe
number.
It like if you were listening through your iPhone or something to the radio.
Yeah.
That's it. Would that count as like a digital radio consumption?
Don't know. It might be consuming it over. See, I don't think internet's digital. It's no.
No. But people who don't know anything about technology call it. They say anything on the internet is digital.
Yeah.
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 Anything tech-wise is just called digital. Let's like throw the word in there.
It's like digital television. We have digital television in Australia now, and that's because the signal is digitally from the transmitter on the mountain.
People actually watch that, though,
as opposed to
digital radio.
More people watch it now than they used to because it's all being turned off very shortly. Even in the major city centres, Sydney, Melbourne, Brisbane, Adelaide, it's only got a year to run, nearly.
Yep.
And that's it. All over Red Rover. It's funny how everything's still shot with 4x3 safe title and safe action.
On DAB Plus?
No, for television.
Just checking. Just testing.
Oh, sorry. Did someone...
Someone forgot to mute their phone.
That's, my round then, isn't it?
Yeah.
$2 in a sweatshirt.
Oh, dear. So... All right, well, is it the future of digital radio? Do you think there is a future for it, or do you think it's going to go all internet and we're going to have SIMs in our...
All internet, yep.
Yeah, we use our mobile devices to Bluetooth into the car and do all that sort of stuff to it over the broadband.
I really hope that Lena's wrong on this one, and I really wish that there was more take-up of it, and I wish that the...
Why?
because having broadcast shouldn't be over IP. It's not designed for that, doesn't do that well. Having everybody listening to their own stream of ABC radio isn't an effective use of the internet. It's a lot of bandwidth for not much effect, whereas if we can get everybody listening to the radio stations on digital radio, the quality should be able to be better than it is, but yeah, shouldn't need to, you know, for broadcast stations, you know, we should be able to use a broadcast medium, not a point-to-point medium like the internet.
A car manufacturer is starting to put DAB Plus radios in new cars in Australia.
I don't know. I haven't bought a new car.
If you've bought,
I don't think they are.
If you bought, well, they should be.
Oh, they should be. That, sake, yeah. That's their place. That's where it ought to be.
They've only just phased out cassette radios.
Yeah, I know. If you've bought a new car recently, then tell us if you've got a DAB Plus radio in it.
Yeah.
Feedback at tiktokradio.com.au. That's where it needs
and
to
if
be.
You've, and if you've got any clout in the industry, up the bit rates, people. Make digital radio sound worthwhile. Good.
It's good for talkback. Because it's just a phone line coming out, and you can get away with blue murder on talkback and voice radio. But music is where it could really be fantastic.
Mm, could be and isn't,
All right. So, happy birthday, digital radio. 3 years down the track and still less than 10 listeners, according to some of the people in the studio.
Finds its legs sometime soon.
Gareth in our chat room says Toyota puts DAB Plus in their new cars.
Really?
Mm, that's good. That's where that needs to be. That's how you're going to start to get some momentum, and the price is going to slowly come down. I don't think it's accessible at the moment. It's still too dear.
Mm.
If you compare it with... Sorry, Lena. Compare it with, like, tiny little... you know, what we used to call trainees, transistor radios, you know, just to listen to normal radio that you chuck in your back pocket or throw in the picnic basket or something. They're like $10 or $12 or something. It's still hundreds of dollars for their Plus receivers.
It is, yeah, I don't understand why they're so dear. I suspect it's because,
not selling enough of them.
Yeah, and it's also DAB Plus. Our technology or the encoding technology is different in this country compared to other countries.
That's right, yes, that's
so,
another problem.
So, like our mobile phones, we're a little, in Australia, obviously, different frequencies, different sort of carriers or different services and things like that. And I suspect the digital side of stuff is of the same ilk, you know.
We can't piggyback off an already mature market, which exists in Europe. Or...
Korea and Taiwan are churning out DAB radios by the truckload, but not for the Australian market.
No, so, for Europeans,
Yeah. So maybe it's got something like that to do with it
well. That's a lot to do with it. Our regulators have still not learned their lesson from decades ago.
Mm. Anyway, before we go to the Oddspot Gadget app and website,
is it that time of the week already?
It sneaks around. Very. I didn't get the email tonight either, so hopefully it's going to be exciting.
Yes, it is. And no, you didn't. It's always exciting.
Oh, I know. Yeah. It's always very exciting. Just touch briefly on Telstra and the call centre issue, which I think you mentioned in the news.
Yeah, I did.
About 2 hours ago, Dr. Om. People like interacting online now, apparently. As in, you know, I think, who was it in our chat that was saying they were using the Telstra chat and the
service? That was Dr. Ron.
Was it Dr. was it one of the listeners that
and
came
Andy
up?
B.
Andy B. came up and said that, yeah.
It's four mentions, Andy.
And, maybe this is another changing part of our lives.
Are we getting paid for every time we mention Andy B.?
I hope so.
Cupcake for each of us, you know that.
651 positions, 651 positions, and the telco is blaming the customers. Saying, people now shun call centres in favour of online services. No one rings us anymore.
Yeah, I wonder why.
Have you tried ringing them recently?
We've experienced a 20% drop in call volumes in the last 12 months. The future is not in call centres. The future is in online. So,
have you rung Telstra? They still go through that, hi, please enter the phone number of the service you're inquiring about. And you spend 4 hours pushing buttons on the phone before you get to speak to someone.
Yeah,
and then the first thing the consultant asks you is what's your phone number? And you say, it's right in front of you on the screen. And they say, oh, no, it hasn't come through this time.
It's funny, every time I've called you in the last 15 years,
it hasn't come through. Exactly.
So now I put in 123456789 and press hash, and then they ask me and I just tell them.
I did get into trouble one day because when they put you on hold, they can still hear you, so you shouldn't swear and curse about them when you're on hold.
I wouldn't do such a thing anyway.
Some people are
They're people too.
Oh, yeah, they are.
Some of them are not.
Oh, dear.
Okay, here we go. That's the end of the show.
They're people here. Yeah, there's people.
So, the point of the discussion, I just thought, isn't it interesting that we're all heading to the online side of things for dealing with telcos? I think even you yourself, Dr. Ron, said tweeting online to a help desk is quite often...
resolves issues faster and more beneficially than actually ringing a call centre and getting the runaround.
I had a horrendous experience with Optus about 6 months ago or 9 months ago, and sat on the phone with them and achieved absolutely nothing, and I was like live tweeting about my experience, and the Optus social media team saw my tweets and said, "No, we can help you out. We can answer that question for you. Here it is." So I pretty much just hung up on the person on the end of the phone because the social media guys were able to help me out.
They did it there and then.
Yep.
That's good like that. Another interesting thing too, just briefly, the Senate, our Australian Senate government, has passed the light data retention laws. They've snuck through. So for law enforcement agencies, they can actually now say to companies like Telstra and iiNet and all that sort of stuff, we want to know about Billy Bloggs and his habits of emailing and stuff like that. So, and I think Australia has done this so that they actually can now claim to be a member of the international community that does all that. I can't think of the actual name that that they do it, but it snuck through. Even Scott Ludlam helped it through, which is the Green Senator and all that sort of stuff. So we're now starting to see the ability for the Australian government to request data from ISPs about your online habits.
It was to pull Australia into line with the European Conventions on Cybercrime.
Yeah, and I'm trying to think, they have a name for that.
Yeah, and I think the issue is that the law enforcement has always been able to do this, but now if they, I think they can direct ISPs and telcos to start saving data where they otherwise wouldn't have saved it.
Yeah, they just kept it for billing, didn't they?
Well, they can keep it for billing and they can say, we've kept this for a month. We're accruing enormous amounts of data every minute of every hour of every day. We're not going to keep it all indefinitely. We're going to use it. We're going to bill people and then we're just going to get rid of it. But now law enforcement agencies can say, no, you must retain that data for a particular customer, for example, while we conduct an investigation or while we obtain a search warrant in order to seize those records and use them lawfully. So it gives the law enforcement agents a bit more power.
Yeah, they can force the telcos to retain data on persons of interest for a set period while a warrant, as you said, is sought.
There you go.
From the appropriate person where you get warrants from.
Whereas at the moment, the telcos or the ISPs can say, no, we don't really want to do that. And we don't have the infrastructure to do that. So sorry, we'd like to help, but we can't.
Yeah.
This law will make them have to comply.
All right, that's Tech Talk Radio. All of the new stuff. We've got the Oddspot Gadget app and website of the week coming up after this.
You're listening to Australia's most informative technology show.
Tech Talk Radio.
The Big T announced its prices for the national broadband network.
And that's a risk you have to be aware of and you have to be prepared to take.
So you've unnecessarily highlighted that awkward part of the conversation.
DLC stands for downloadable content.
Yeah, that's what it gives you if you've already got the toolbar.
I want a portal gun.
I want a portal gun.
Telstra need to take more safeguards so that one piece of equipment can't take down a network.
Entertaining, informative and independent.
You're listening to Tech Talk Radio.
In this house, we obey the laws of thermodynamics.
Tech Talk Radio's Gadget of the Week.
The Sony Smartwatch is a wristwatch that links with a phone to show text messages, emails, photos and updates from your social networks on its face. The watch can also be used to hit redial and control other functions like the smartphone's music player. And it also tells the time. It's a simple 1.4-inch square with a glassy face and polished silver-coloured bezel. The display screen measures 1.3 inches diagonally. Sony Xperia phones come ready to sync with the watch, but because the watch uses the Android platform, some other Android phones can also connect once the LiveWear app is downloaded. When a call or message comes in, the phone vibrates and wakes the screen on your watch, which stays lit for 15 seconds. Incoming calls show the number and name of the person. If the name of the person is in your contact list, messages come through as a blue icon. RRP is $150.
I want one.
Really?
That'd be cool.
Store.sony.com. That's where to find more information. Andrew, that's a gadget, the Sony smartwatch.
Here it is, everybody. The world's greatest website.
Tech Talk Radio website of the week.
Thank you, GD, for this week's suggestion. www.spaceweatherradio.com, a website for radio geeks and astronomy enthusiasts. This website offers a live audio stream of the United States Air Force Space Surveillance Radar, which is scanning the skies above Texas. When a meteor or satellite passes above the facility, ping, there's an echo. Simply click the button on this website to listen
to the live audio feed. Here's how it works. The Air Force Space Surveillance Radio radar transmits a radio signal at 216.98 megahertz into the heavens 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Meteors, satellites and spacecraft passing overhead reflect those signals back down to Earth. The radar's primary antenna, there it is located near Texas, a few hundred miles away in Roswell, New Mexico. A radio engineer and longtime spaceweather.com enthusiast picks up the echoes using a Yagi antenna on his roof.
A what?
A Yagi antenna.
I thought that was that bear again.
No. A Yagi antenna is a directional antenna.
Cool.
That's our website.
Oh, sorry.
Spaceweatherradio.com. Woohoo!
Tech Talk Radio, app of the week.
Thank you, Matt from Muralbark, for this week's suggestion. The application is Microsoft Cliplets.
Muralbark.
If you go to research.microsoft.com and have a look, you'll see all there is to know about Microsoft Cliplets. These are a type of... Cliplets themselves are a type of imagery that sit between stills and video, including imagery such as video textures. Cliplets is a fun program and can produce some great results quite easily,
says
Matt.
So what does it do? I'm trying to work out what it is.
Well, it's a mixture of static and dynamic elements from a video clip.
Oh, really? So it jazzes up your desktop or something, does it?
Yeah, well, anything. Use it in a web page, use it in a product, like a promotional video.
I'll have to go and have a look.
If, for example, you have, imagine a picture of a water fountain in a public space or a video of a water fountain, there's people walking past in the background and the water's running out of the fountain, you can create a static background while the fountain still keeps running.
So one part of the image moves and the others don't.
Yeah, you've got people like in mid-stride while the water's still trickling out the fountain.
There's been a few of them around, like men sitting reading newspapers and the newspaper moves but nothing else does.
Haven't people been making clever animated GIFs on the internet for decades now?
Mm-hmm.
I have. If you work in graphic design or advertising or any form of image manipulation, this could be quite interesting.
Welcome to 1996, Microsoft.
That's right.
Glad you got here.
Free downloads.
Bring back the paperclip in Windows 8.
Oh, God.
32-bit and 64-bit Windows on the Microsoft website. That's the app, Andrew, Microsoft Cliplets.
Can you dig it?
No, ma'am. We're musicians.
My, the meatloaf!
Bon.
You can't handle the truth!
And the hits just keep on coming.
The Odd Spot on Tech Talk Radio.
When it comes to understanding the charges on your electricity bill, don't get left in the dark.
Ah, I get it. I see what you did there.
Like Grace Edwards of Cheshire in Connecticut, USA.
Oh, Grace.
The utilities company Connecticut Light and Power has just reimbursed Mrs. Edwards $10,491 after she unwittingly had paid to run two streetlights for 25 years.
Really?
The company expressed regret in the billing error, which has spanned 2 decades.
Did they actually cross the wire somewhere? Or
a spokesperson for the electricity provider said Mrs. Edwards received service that is below our standards, and we've apologised to her. The amount included everything Mrs. Edwards had incorrectly paid. This is the amount that was reimbursed, as well as interest. And the spokesperson said they will be using this case as a learning experience. The company said Mrs. Edwards had unfortunately been paying running costs for a 9,500 lumen HP sodium streetlight and a 6,300 lumen HP sodium streetlight since the mid-1980s.
Are they expensive to run? I don't know.
Well, they cost 10 grand. She spent 10 grand.
How long?
25 years.
25 years. Hope she has a nice holiday with that.
Always check your utility bills.
Yeah.
Make sure you have any sodium vapor lamps out the front.
Check the wiring out the front of your place,
That's a right spot, Andrew.
And that's the show. That's episode 399. Next week, episode 400.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow.
400 episodes.
Don't know whether we're going to do anything special or not yet. It's a bit like water off a duck's back when you get this big down the track. Anyway, I'm sure something will happen. You never know. Thank you, everyone, for joining us this evening. Thank you, Lineman. Thank you, Ball Boys.
Thank you, everyone, for listening.
Thanks to everyone on the chat.
Sending in your stuff. Send in more stuff.
Keep it coming in for our next show. That'd be good.
If you're not subscribed to the email newsletter, then do so. You can sign up on our webpage, www.techtalkradio.com.au.
All right, back next week, same time, same station where you're listening to. Have a great day today, and see you then. Bye for now.
You've been listening to Tech Talk Radio, brought to you each and every week by a group of dedicated professionals from within the media, broadcasting, IT and telecommunications industries. The team consists of executive producer Andrew McComb, producer Dr. Ron, regular panellists Graham Callaghan, Mark Diggins and Lena Van Deventer. Expert opinion from Adam Turner, and our US correspondent is Lydia Davis. Post-production facilities courtesy of Evolving Communications. Podcast production by GC Support and Shaq West. Tech Talk Radio is broadcast, recorded and streamed live
live to the world each and every Monday night at 8pm from the studios of 3WBC in Melbourne. The crew wish to thank all the stations around Australia and around the world that broadcast the show. Tech Talk Radio is available for syndication on your local station. Contact us for the two-hour version or access the one-hour show on the Community Radio Network. Visit cbaa.org.au for further details. For sponsorship and advertising, call 03 8682 9099 or visit our website, techtalkradio.com.au, for more information. Don't forget, you can follow the panellists on Twitter, join us live each Monday night in the Tech Talk Radio chat, and solve your issues on the Tech Talk Radio forum. This has been a production of Tech Talk Radio Vic and is subject to copyright and applicable laws and may not be rebroadcast without approval.